and welcome to a very special bonus episode of the O3C podcast, celebrating the absolute extraordinary masterpiece that is The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. My name is Jonathan Dunn, and I'm joined by Casper Meyerowitz.
Hello, everybody. It's been a minute.
So in part one, we talked about the story of the game. In part two, we talked about the world and the people. And last time, in part three, we talked about Link's new abilities and the shrines in the game. So that leads us on to part four of two. And we've got some ground to cover. I mean, quite literally, as we delve into the different planes of Hyrule. We're going to be chatting about the depths in the sky, the brand new sub and super Terrania, respectively, in Tears of the Kingdom. But before we do that, there's some new elements on the surface world of Hyrule that we haven't really discussed, and those are wells and caves.
Yeah.
Let's kick off with the wells. I mean, we sort of briefly touched upon a couple of the wells last episode, because there's a couple of shrines down a couple of wells.
Yes.
So it's very possible that there was a bit of an overlap. I mean, Nintendo are incredibly generous with this game. Let's not be funny. I mean, 150 shrines in the game, and they were like, fuck it, let's do more. There are now 58 wells for you to find, and you may find side quests, treasures, puzzles, enemies, bosses, shrines, all kinds of things down them. And you can also find secret passages to other areas. It's just a great additional thing to be on the lookout for. What were some of your well-based highlights? A classic topic on any good conversation.
Well, Orson Welles, of course.
He's a good one.
And then H.G. Wells, pretty good too.
What about the 56 others?
Right. Hatino has, I think, one of the most intricate ones.
Mm, yes.
Most of the wells in Hatino are connected. Mm. There's one by your house now, where there's a Zelda little diary and chest, which is really nice. Yeah, I believe that's the most intricate set of wells.
Mm.
I would say in most cases, the towns in Tears of the Kingdom haven't changed that drastically.
Yeah.
And I think the wells, in at least in Hitino, is a really great way for Nintendo to kind of add something to those places.
I mean, we're going to come on to talk about the caves, but like, the caves do that for the overworld.
For sure. Know,
and then it probably stemmed from an idea to be like, oh, why don't we put some stuff underneath the towns? And then it's like, well, why don't we put them in wells? And it's like, oh, there were some wells in Breath of the Wild. What if they got unblocked? What if we then hid them and did a blah, 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 blah. And then there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, the wells are great, but the real extra element in play is these caves. I mean, there are almost 150 caves in the game, which is mad. That's as many as there are shrines. Some of the entrances are quite clear to the caves, but more often than not, they're obscured somehow. If that's by like a literal obstruction or just by being small and hidden out of the way.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the game's got a few ways to help you find cave entrances. Keep an eye out for any blue peas hanging about, those little magical blue rabbity things. Nice little bonus in and of itself when you spot one, because you can get a few rupees by shooting them with arrows, but they'll also run off usually in the direction of a cave opening. It's a wonderful organic way of finding the caves, and you may find yourself not aware of that mechanic because it just feels like you're organically stumbling across the caves, just subtly pointed in that direction.
And I think there's a kind of a narrative element to that, in the sense that every cave has a bubble frog.
Yes.
Who's that grotesque creature who seems to be an evil entity that swallows a bubble, or like kind of takes it over.
Yeah.
And once you defeat it, it turns back into a bubble that you free.
Yeah.
And it seems like the bloopies are the ones that are outside the caves are pointing you towards, hey, my bud's in there. Can you go help him out?
Yeah.
Because every single cave has a bubble frog.
Yes.
That's another way to find them too, is if you take a picture of a bubble frog and attach it to your radar, you can find
you
the
can
case.
Track them down. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 Yeah.
So if you're in an area like, okay, there's one over here.
The other really, really cool way of finding the caves is to find the cherry blossom trees that are in each region. There's one cherry blossom tree in each region. If you make an offering to the Satori, then some beacons will appear by all the cave entrances for a short while, right. And that will help you find them as well. Because yeah, it's just lovely that there's just these really organic, sort of natural ways of finding these.
A couple of the caves you cannot find through that way, and I think all the ones that are not highlighted are generally part of a quest.
Yeah,
I know this sadly because I did 100% of the map, and you have to find every single cave entrance.
Oh yeah,
and every entrance. That means if a cave has multiple entrances, you have to find all of them. It's not exhaustive. If you do every single Satori tree and you go like in the sky and you see all the lights, it's a pretty generous amount of time you have to spot them out and put them on your map. And again, the way it is done is, especially since playing this game, it's been a while now, playing all these other open world games that have all these such boring ways to make you explore.
Yeah.
They have such an organic way to lead you to these things. For instance, if you go to one of the stables, you will find a little world map with red trees kind of painted over.
Mm.
And it's for every single Satori tree in the game. And that's amazing because the game's not like, oh, check this out. Like, it's not like it pans Link once you come in. You could totally miss it. Or you could look at it for half a second and just be like, I don't know what this is. Uninteresting. But if you look at it and you're like, oh, if you found one, which is, I think, how it worked for me, I had already found one of the trees. So I looked at that and I was like, oh. And I'd marked where the tree was. So I looked, it was like, there's a tree right there. So every other one is marked out. And it's such a joy. And you feel like you feel part of it. Yeah. You know, you feel like you're part of working out this stuff. And you really, we could spend, 10 episodes talking about just the incredibly organic seeming world design in this game.
Yeah.
It's just breathtaking.
It really is.
Especially when you go back to, games that are like designed like they were in the PS2 era, which is apparently every PS5 game now. It's just crazy. It just feels they're operating on a completely different level. They're not playing the same game. They are not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything is just so thought out.
Mm, but also, it's incredibly fun.
Yeah.
Like, because all of this stuff is amazing. And then you get into the caves and there's so many amazing little things to do, and it's always fun. Like it is like 150 other shrines, there's puzzles to solve, there's enemies and bosses, you've got to hunt down the bubble frog that's hiding in there. And these caves are just enormous and elaborate. And it's just when you're walking around on the overworld and you're just aware of how much is going on beneath your feet, just in the caves, it really is quite mind blowing. One of the really, really cool things about the caves is the fact that the climate inside them reflects the region that they're in. And then that becomes part of the puzzle to solve and the obstacles to overcome. So, if you're up where there's loads of snow and ice, there's going to be snow and ice inside the cave. There's going to be lava, Death Mountain caves.
Eldenia.
And
Eldenia.
It's just really, really cool to see that because it's just, again, it's just another way of making this world feel so just alive and enticing and, just exciting to want to explore because you just never know what's going to be around the corner.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Fun is really, it seems, the primary focus they went for, for sure, as we've talked about many times. I don't know. I couldn't stop playing the game even when I had done everything.
Yeah.
And it was a true sadness because I'm like, it was still fun, but I'm like, oh, I've done everything. And you couldn't complain. I'd play it 300 hours, but it was just so fun that it's just like, oh no, it's over. You know? And now, honestly, most games I play, I'm like happy to be done with. Like, 90% of them, even if I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of happy to move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's why I jumped straight into that replay through of Breath of the Wild, because I was like, nope, I want more of this.
And it there's a sadness when you're finishing something that's that special.
Yeah.
And the caves were a huge part of that, because there's no checkmark stuff. It's not like, well, you've explored, 30 of the 50 caves in this area or something. It's not like that.
No.
It's very like, yeah, sure, you can go. You don't have to. If you want, and of course you do. you know, when it's presented like that, and when they're all different, and there's like, oh, here's a little card game, and here's a little, you know, test of strength, or here's a little, you know, puzzle, and where's shrine? A lot of the shrines are in the caves.
Yeah.
Generally a lot of fun, like the one where you have to bomb the water so that the water drains, and then you get the shrine.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun. You just never, you truly never know what you're going to find in there. It doesn't really repeat that much. Just,
no, you know. It's too good.
So apparently my favorite cave is probably the massive one under Lookout Landing, which is the one where there's so much stuff to destroy.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so many ways to destroy, so much rubble. Yeah. And that's so satisfying. It's probably like the game you like, the power jet thing. I forget what that's called.
Power washer.
Power washer. It's a little bit of that. You're like, I didn't break this little corner here. Like, there's a little bit of that where you're like, rubble. Yes, please, more of it. And the one on Lookout Landing is incredibly long. It leads you from all the way to Lookout Landing to the castle.
Yeah.
And you can pretty much go to, you know, the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like from there, like with it, you know, without even knowing.
And
you're
I did. And I remember, I can't remember who I messaged. It was probably you or Minty or Chris or all of you just being like, I think I've accidentally found the final boss. Because like I was like, I just wanted to explore, and I just kept going and going, and it just kept going and going and going and going. And it's just,
it doesn't stop you. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, keep going. Yeah, what else is there? Yeah, that's right.
But I had the foresight to throw a medallion down.
Yes, I remember you saying that.
I think I
copied that once you said that. I did it because I wanted to see what it was. But
But when the time came for me to go and take the boss on, I was like, no, I want to do that. I want to do that whole gauntlet again.
because it's and there's a lot of great mats, I think, because it's a bunch of Lynels and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the Gerudo area ones because they felt like a Indiana Jones movie.
Yes, yeah.
They really fit the scenery. I feel like Gerudo's maybe my favorite way to use the caves and the wells.
Yeah.
Is they just feel so, you know, integral.
Yeah.
They really feel like they would be there.
And the fact that you can like fall into them through like sort of quicksand and stuff like that, it's just, it's very, very cool.
It's so cool.
Because you panic for a minute as you get sucked into the quicksand, and then you're like, oh, now I'm in some abandoned old ancient Gerudo prison or something. And
that one has, I think, 10 entrances to map out.
Yeah.
Because every quicksand in that area gets you there. Yeah. It's so much fun. Yeah, there's like the mummies and stuff. It really feels like, I think it was some crappy Indiana Jones book tie-in. They were pretty mediocre books, but I was reading them like as a teenager, and it was one in like, it was a desert area, and there's like a lot of stuff like that, like caves and like little, you know, sandy mummies type stuff. And it was always very like, ooh, this is appealing. You know, this is just like the fake archaeologist thing.
Yeah.
you know, yeah, Steven Spielberg really probably made archaeology a lot cooler than it is through several films.
A lot less paperwork.
Yeah.
Well, let's cast our eyes upwards and talk about a whole area of the game that we were fully exposed to in all of the trailers and the media coverage surrounding the game before it came out. And that's the entire new plane of Hyrule that was at play in this game, which is the sky. And immediately this brought echoes of Skyward Sword to the game, fortunately.
Yeah.
Wasn't anything like that.
No.
So, I mean, thematically, there's the upheaval in the game, and this has seen a whole host of sky islands appear. And we're not just talking about a few elevated bits of ground to explore. I best describe the way the sky feels as how the Great Sea felt in Wind Waker.
Yeah,
just a huge expanse to traverse with a multitude of formations to explore just dotted around. But they're all operating on different planes of elevation, meaning you need to get very creative with how you use Link's abilities and how you make your vehicles and constructions to be able to reach and explore all of these amazing new places. There's a brilliant symmetry to some of the areas as well, with like aerial inversions of several terrestrial sections, like the labyrinths that are in the corners of the map. They've got a whole extra version now in the sky. And of course, you start your whole journey on one of these islands, which is the enormous Great Sky Island, to really get you used to the idea that verticality is going to be a huge part of your adventure this time round.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some amazing areas to explore in the sky. There's also several shrines to find and mini-bosses to fight to. I think some of my favourites were, I love the giant orbs that you have to get inside somehow to then solve some puzzles and unlock some shrines. And also just the incredible surprise of low gravity being a component of some of the sky areas. Like, it's just amazing how the game could just keep surprising you the more and more that you explore.
That low gravity thing, you could see an entire game.
Yeah.
Like, being made out of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and it would be absolutely brilliant because they just did, like, you know, I don't know, maybe five of them in the game total or something like that.
But it's just
all brilliant, but.
Yeah.
You could do a whole, like, I could see a whole, like, Portal 3, like, gravity mode. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You could do an entire game around that.
But you could take any mechanic from this game this could be a whole game, you know? And there are whole games.
And they're half as good.
Exactly,
yeah.
But I loved how the sky just felt like it's a whole own part of the world, you know, like the flora and fauna and like the ancient design of the islands. It wasn't just this like add-on additional area. It was all, as with everything else, just perfectly considered and meticulously designed and integrated in a way that, you know.
A lot more saxophone up there, which is great. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Saxophone, deeply underused instrument, so.
What were some of your highlights in the sky, your skylights?
My favorite thing in the sky was trying to solve how to get to the out of reach, really far out of the main islands that you could reach in the sky, and the ones that were extremely elevated. And at first, it was a real puzzle. By the end of the game, you kind of have a couple of ways. You're like, okay, rockets and that metal thing. But the first few times, I was like, I really want to see what, you know, is up there. It was like the complete puzzle, you know, I didn't exactly know how to do it. And figuring it out was so joyful.
Yeah.
You know, it was like looking around. All right, if I look in the direction of that island, they left this thing. So clearly they want me to use that if I want to, you know, go.
Yeah.
It's like there's a big blocky metal thing that you can like stick Ultra Hand rockets to.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's the kind of thing you trial and error, you figure out, oh no, this thing has a shelf life. Like it evaporates after a while. You're like, oh no. So you have to time it and you have to find ways to be speedy, like upwards and in a direction. And it's just so fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just ridiculous. And again, it speaks to the organic nature of how they did all of these things. All of the out of reach stuff, which you probably won't do immediately. Most players won't because they're like too busy just figuring stuff out. Have like some of the toughest enemies, like has a King Gliok on some of those. And they're pretty tough at first. If you get to a King Gliok early in the game, you're going to get decimated. Once you figure it out a few things, King Gliok is a joke.
Yeah.
If you understand, again, the arrow, the honing arrows.
We'll come on to that in a bit.
You're good. Yeah. But anyway, that was my favorite part in Sky. It was just kind of like figuring out how to get to out of reach stuff.
Mm.
And it kind of, you're right, it does have a little bit of a Wind Waker feel.
Mm.
In Wind Waker, you're like, ooh, out of reach stuff. I mean, it's easier to get to in Wind Waker, but it still has that little feeling of like, ooh, I'm not really supposed to go there, you know, and you are, but you're not, you know, not fully. And there's something so wonderful about that.
Yeah.
You know?
I love the way that the dragons work into the sky as well. I mean,
oh yeah,
the dragons are amazing in this game. I was sure that you could land on them in Breath of the Wild when I did it in Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can't. But they're now.
I didn't even remember that.
But these are now like flying platforms that you can also mine for materials and stuff like that.
True.
And the fact that you're spending so much time in the sky and just seeing everything, and you'll just see like. You'll see a dragon passing like by an island or something. And you think, oh yeah, no, I reckon I could get over there while it's passing. I may as well dive down and maybe chip off a bit of its horn for something. You know? And it's just.
And they all have this incredible path, right?
Yeah. But it's like a 2-hour loop.
Right. And it's so great. It's a great way to like find stuff.
Yeah.
You're kind of out of ideas. You're a little bit out of ideas of like, what am I going to do right now? You see a dragon, you're like, ooh. Just going to perch on the dragon and see what I see, you know. And, oh, it's bringing me to the depth. Oh, I haven't been here. Here's you know, something to light up again.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's just, I've said this so many times during the podcast, but I'm really baffled by anybody who has any kind of, you know, who's underwhelmed by this game. I just don't get it.
Well, it's just £70 DLC, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just don't understand how you can get there.
It's absurd.
Unless you're just so
thick,
unobservant. Yeah, but you just, are you blind? Are you, you know, what's happening? Like, are you not aware of, is this your first video game? Is that what the problem is? Like, you're not aware of it? I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we can talk at such great length about stuff that's new in this game.
Yeah.
So an area of the game that was kept surprisingly under wraps for the entire of pre-production and all the way up until release was the whole other plane of existence in Hyrule beneath the surface, which is, of course, the Gloomy Depths. It's amazing that they kept a lid on this, and it, I mean, such a joy to discover, because it is vast. It is literally as big as the surface overworld, but filled with such gloomy anomalies that, like the sky, it feels like you're in a totally different world. And the fact that you're literally exploring in the darkness with such colossal silence echoing around you makes for just
amazing.
An incredibly intimidating and tense exploratory experience. Like, the way that your traversal works in the depths is that you are seeking to illuminate the entirety of this underworld by reaching light routes that are scattered throughout the depths. Reaching one of these will light up the surrounding area, give you a bit of a clearer view of what's been lurking down there,
mm-hmm.
and allow you to tiptoe into further areas of darkness, see if you can spot a dormant light route in the distance and make your way to it. There is a very, very clear inversion of the surface of Hyrule in the depths, with direct mirrors of key areas, with like the larger mines being directly underneath the larger settlements on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Key points of interest in the overworld are usually reflected in the underworld below. And the biggest point of reflection is that the light routes are all directly below shrines on the surface.
Yeah.
Which is a brilliant design decision that I didn't really feel the benefit of until I was sort of a very, very long way into the game and reaching the point where I was checking off the remaining shrines and light routes, and you'd be able to use the location of their counterpart on the map to find the missing ones on the other plane.
Which it took me so long to figure out.
It's genius.
It is genius.
It gives you just about enough of a clue to go on to keep you exploring without finding the want or need to look something up online or something like that. And like,
yeah.
I mean, much like the sky, the depths had so many incredible surprises for me to stumble across. Like, first time I ran into the enormous Phrox enemies, or stumbling upon a giant colosseum filled with a gauntlet of enemies.
Oh my God.
All the Yiga bases with their incredible auto-build machinations to steal. I mean, the design and scale of this whole area is just mind-blowing. Like, I never thought I would enjoy spending so much time in a place that was so gosh darn gloomy, but it's just so magnetic. It's like, it's proper, pure exploration, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just immense. Yeah.
And again, like this, now we can really, because we're discussing all these, the way the depth, the surface, the sky echo each other in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's incredibly well done, because there's resources in every section that kind of you need. In the sky, there's like flowers that you could use under, you know, to get rid of the gloom. So it's constantly telling you, oh, you don't have enough of that. Well, why don't you go back to the depth for a bit? You know, it doesn't tell you that, but it's kind of implicitly like, hey, oh, you're low on bombs. Well, you know.
Go to the depths for a bit and you'll end up, you'll go to the depths for 5 minutes to collect some bombs and you'll be down there for 3 hours, you know.
Exactly. Or like, oh, I'm exploring caves and now I got all these little bright blooms to explore down, you know, to explore down there. I'm like, oh, well, now I have hundreds. I'm going to go back there, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so joyful. I also loved when you get the Lynel bow, even though it's kind of a waste of, you know, a Lynel bow, but you know, if you like killing Lynel, it's not a problem, which I do a lot. when you get the five arrows release bow, and you have the like the massive bright plumes, and you can like, it's so dark and you just shoot and they go like in five different directions and it lights up, it's just so satisfying. And all of these things, you know, most video games, you get to a video game, you play a little bit, they're like, all right, here's this mechanic. You're done. you learn five things and you're going to rinse repeat for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll learn a few more. But this game just has so many little things, you know, systems within, and there, you know, there are people who played this game, might have beaten it, who probably use like 5% of the systems this game has to offer.
Yeah.
Because it's just constant. And unlike, you know, not to crap on, if you love Skyrim, that's fine. But, you know, unlike Skyrim, which is a giant place to explore, the mechanics that you can use that are already in the game, not modded in, are incredible. That's the thing. It's like, yes, it's an incredible place they've designed. Yes, it's an incredible place, you know, visually and, you know, audio, all of it. But on top of that, it is deeply, deeply fun to explore. And you could do it, you know, 50 different ways. Mm. You know, you're in the depth. Once you start understanding, you can use like the little motor, the hover bike that everybody used.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But you could do it all sorts of ways. You could build a little vehicle. You could go on a skeleton horseback, or you could just go by foot and just, you know, kind of creep yourself out.
Or you could ride a dragon.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, that was one of my when I first saw wherever the red dragon is just flying through in the background. I was just that was a proper gobsmacking moment. That
and the Elden Region depth is incredible. Oh my god, the lava, it's so beautiful. It's incredible. And, you know, and the temple that's there, we'll talk about that later. But
yeah,
the whole area around them, it's so majestic and mysterious and, you know, fascinating. It's just everything you light up, like those roots, the design, the art direction in this game is staggering.
It feels like it's its own. Like it does. It feels like you're in an alien world, you know.
It does.
But also that it's still part of this world, you know, that you're in. It's extraordinary. It really is.
I'm gonna have to play this again soon.
I know, I'm feeling the same.
That's been long enough, anyway.
So let's talk about some of the new enemies that are in the game. We've touched on a few of them just now, because there are some really, really cool new enemies and some series returning ones too, which are more than notable. Let's start with the entirely new type of enemy in the game, which are the Constructs. And these are kind of replacing what the ancient Guardians were in Breath of the Wild, essentially awoken ancient tech from eons past. The Constructs come in several forms, including friendly and helpful NPCs, but also in the form of Construct soldiers and Construct captains, which wield all kinds of weapons and abilities, because these chaps can also fuse items to their weapons as well, making each encounter really versatile, keeping you on your toes. What did you make of the Constructs?
I loved it. Plus, early on, when you're still figuring out, especially when they're on, you know, on the Great Island in the sky, when you're figuring out fusing, they give you great ideas because they have, there's the shield with something on it, like a, you know, the fire head.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, you know, so it's, again, just brilliant design. The opening area is just incredible with that, the Constructs, because you're just like, oh, you can do that, you know. Wow, okay, that's really cool. So on top of, you know, teaching you ways to, you know, fight in the game and avoid fire, you know, flame creatures and how to deal with them, they're giving you ideas on how to approach enemies, you know. So then when you're in an icy region, you're like, aha, I got this, you know. So I love the Construct. Mm. I think they were, first of all, the design is great. But again, just such a brilliant way to teach you the game.
Yeah.
You know, and start you off in the area where, you know, it's the ancient future technology that will really teach you how to play the game.
Yeah.
And yeah, at first, I feel like every time you see a new Construct, they have a different weapon that's kind of like...
Yeah.
The version, you know, it's like, oh, I brought, you know, a matchstick. Well, I'm like, I gotta, like, I got a flamethrower. he's a bazooka, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So you're not even realizing that, but you're just the game's constantly teaching you stuff.
The other replacement for the Guardians, certainly the big Guardian stalkers that were in Breath of the Wild, which would be lurking in some of the larger, more open areas and strike fear into your heart as they spot you and come running after you on their lightning fast spider legs.
The music is really what does it.
Oh yeah.
The piano. You're like, No.
It's this generation's Jaws, isn't it?
Yeah. This is going to be highly controversial, but that theme is like 10 times better than Jaws' theme, in my opinion. I'm sorry. I had to say it. Sorry. It's incredibly brilliant.
Well, there's something even more fearsome waiting for us in Tears of the Kingdom, and that is the Gloom Spawn. And Gloom is like the malice in Breath of the Wild, highly dangerous, dark material that taints everything it touches. And some of the Gloom has come to life in the form of these monstrous hands with eyes. Incredibly fast, dangerous, and powerful. They can spring out of nowhere with a total element of surprise, and they're very hard to deal with because the multiple hands don't stay dead if you don't dispatch the others quick enough. They can regenerate and keep coming after you. And then, if you do manage to beat them all, a fucking Phantom Ganon appears to fight you. They're thrilling, thrilling encounters. But I mean, so, so dangerous. And I mean, unthinkable to take on until you're many, many hours into the game.
Nobody's going to forget the first time they fight those things. And also, Scratch, I'm going to have to take back what I said about the Guardian theme, because the hand theme is even better.
One thing I really loved about them was that, like, you could start to spot where they were going to spawn because of, like, subtle environmental signposting.
Yeah.
It might just be, like, that there's an area strangely devoid of life, like the animals don't even go near it, or you can see a cluster of trees that have taken some damage or other things like that. Like, even if you don't noticeably clock those things, it's enough so that when you enter an area, you'll feel like things are just a bit off and it'll put you on your toes. Again, phenomenal game design.
It's incredible. So my first encounter with them, I actually was completely taken aback because I was inside of a cave. So it's one of those that like spawns in a cave.
Yes, I remember the one.
I managed to beat them on my first try because there was a little elevated area that they couldn't reach. But then it said Phantom again. And I think I bailed.
Yeah.
Forget what happened. I was like, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah, thank God for Ascend.
Yeah, I was like, okay, no. Because I was early game. I think I used all my arrow supply to just nick them. You know, like, it took forever. And I was completely depleted of anything. I had no weapons. So when the Phantom arrived, I was like, I'm out of here. Couldn't do it. But it was so memorable. Fascinating.
And you get really cool gloom weapons for winning the fights, which were incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
But would also inflict gloom upon you when you use them. So they're proper, a literal double-edged sword.
I think if you stick them to a weapon that isn't gloomy, it didn't affect you.
So you could do that until the material broke.
Right.
And there's all kinds of incredible ways of beating it. Like putting like a gloom greatsword on the end of a spear or something, you know.
My favorite was the great gloom sword on the master sword, I think.
Brilliant.
Just like this super long, like insanely powerful thing. It's so good.
There are some other new general enemies, like the Horoblins and new subspecies of the wider Oblin family. And these are so cool and really creepy. Like they look like an evolved Bokoblin that is strong and fucking angry. And they crawl across the ceilings of caves and have ranged attacks and melee attacks. They're just very, very cool and intimidating. It feels like that the start of that design was, what if a Bokoblin evolved in the depths?
Yeah.
You know, what would that look like? Again, just celebrating and embracing this new sort of like verticality in this game. You know, they've got to make sure that the threats are coming at you from all angles, you know, and now you've got these bastards on the ceiling.
Yeah, I love that. It reminded me of this lemur documentary. Where there's like one of these lemurs who evolves like in the dark areas that's like swamp, and he has to like essentially his hand is like a Swiss Army knife, and he has like one of his fingers is like this insanely long thing just so he can like dig out of like a cane, you know, like a cane, because that's what was in the surrounding areas, like the only thing he could eat.
Jeez.
So evolution gave him this giant thing just for that. Incredible. So it reminded me of that. I feel like they must But in a way, I feel like, yeah, they must kind of like study, like the art designers, like must study that.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Really well, like, you of know, course. Like how yeah. does, you know, this evolve and like, you know, evolution and
yeah.
Like, yeah. And you're right. Like, what if a moblin was like, you know, fell down a well,
yeah.
did not go back up, and maybe a female moblin fell down there as well.
Yeah.
And just had an entire...
A few thousand years later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I could have sworn blind that the Bokoblin captains were in Breath of the Wild. When I saw them in Tears of the Kingdom, I was like,
oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, I remember these guys. And I didn't, because they're brand new and they're fantastic, big, giant. They're sort of... They're halfway between a moblin and a Hinox.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're sort of the halfway point, and they're always accompanied by a little trail of bokoblins.
Oh, I love that. It reminded me of one of the things I did like in Twilight Princess, which was the guys that, like, you have a fight on a horseback. There was the one thing where you get to that bridge. It was,
oh,
like, in
yes.
all the trailers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
remember
yeah, yeah.
that? And there's
yes.
one, and you have to fight him on, yeah. the, on the horseback. He is giant. He has an armor. That kind of, it was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
A little bit of that DNA.
They were great. And yeah. also, I would have put good hard cash on the fact that like-likes were in Breath of the Wild.
Oh.
And they weren't.
No.
Like-likes, again, series classic brought back for Tears of the Kingdom. But yeah, seriously, I would have fought you if you'd have told me that they weren't in Breath of the Wild.
It's Mandela Effect, the game.
Because
it's similar in so many ways. So you just can't, yeah.
But it's great to see them back. They're horrible and they're freaky and they've got all these different elemental variants as well. And another enemy that is returning to the Zelda series in quite an incredible way are the Gleox. We touched
oh,
on them
man.
Earlier.
Incredible.
And it's actually quite a deep cut too for long-term fans of the series. They've appeared... sporadically,
yeah, because they're only like two, I think three games total. They're in the first game,
yeah,
and then like in one of the Game Boy games.
They're in Oracle of Seasons, and they're in one of the DS ones as well. But it's
yeah.
like, yeah, but they've always been in sort of quite different forms, and this
yeah.
is obviously by far their most fearsome appearance to date.
Like, yeah,
enormous three-headed elemental dragons terrorizing the world, raining
yeah.
down fire, ice and lightning on everything around it, and King Gleox sporting a head of each element, extra intimidating. I mean, I remember the first time I saw a Lynel in Breath of the Wild, or rather the second time, because I didn't know what they were the first time and I quickly
mm-hmm.
found out. But every time I spot a Lynel on the horizon, I'd have a little shiver. Gleox just plain put the fear of God in me. It was
yeah.
it was many, many tens of hours before I was brave enough to even just attempt to take one on. But like you alluded to, once you know the trick
yeah.
of the homing arrows to take out their heads,
yeah, and they,
that does a lot of the work for you.
I would say 99% of the work.
Yeah, but still, you've still got to be... They've still got a really good puzzle-solving element to like,
yes.
the phases of the fight. So the different... They'll always bring in like an extra elemental challenge that sees you having to scale up ice blocks or avoid lightning and stuff like this to sort of... As it flies up into the sky, out of reach, you need
yeah.
to sort of follow it up there. It's brilliant.
Yeah, because you can use recall on the stuff it brings.
Yes.
All those fights are so brilliant.
Mm.
And yeah, I love how they bring back old concepts. And that's kind of like the whole DNA of this game is just pure, you know, Zelda. But it's really like, how do we fit it here? How do we make it fun? Is it worth
and
it?
And how do we evolve it as well?
Yeah, because, exactly.
Like, but also so organically that you don't even necessarily notice it. Like,
no.
Even like all of the ways that the enemies have been designed, the returning enemies, they've got this new feature, and the fact that you're getting materials from them means that they've got those distinct sort of materials as part of their bodies. So you see like
yeah.
the different horns on the different coloured bokoblins and moblins and Lynels, and it means that when you fuse their horn to a weapon, it feels like a real trophy, and you're just
yeah.
brandishing the remains of an enemy in the face of another enemy.
I love this game.
Apart from the silver bokoblin horn, which is weird with its bouncy little yellow ball on the end.
Yeah.
The easiest, strongest material to get. So I was using it all the time, but it always felt a little pathetic because it was like I was just dusting them with a pom-pom or something. But what's your favorite enemy in the game?
I would say favorite to fight was Lightnells, you know, like the very hard ones, especially once...
The ones with the rock armor on.
Yeah.
In the depths. Well,
yeah.
Were,
yeah, those were
immense.
They're incredible.
But also the way you could use a puff... what was the confusion mushroom? And you could, there's a point in the depths where you could get, like, a Lionel to fight a Bokoblin captain by luring it over, confusing it, and getting them to attack each other.
Oh, so good. Yeah, I marked all the Lionels, and whenever... Yeah, the difference is, I think in Breath of the Wild, when there was a blood moon, I was annoyed. And this, I got excited because I was I can go to all my good Lionel spots.
Yeah.
You know,
harvest all the materials and get the bows and everything. Yeah.
I had all the bow multiplier thing. There's a trick to essentially get a better bow with the Elden Region Octo Rocks. And I essentially made it so that I had all the bow thing filled out with the Korok seeds at every spot possible. And then I had a 5-arrow x32 attack, like, filled out.
Yeah.
Because I just killing Lionel's left, right, and center. And anytime it was, like, broken, I'd just bring it to an Octorok. Like, oh, it's about to burst. I'll just give it to him. And he fixed it. It was just, so much joy.
So good.
So incredible. New enemies, probably King Gliok.
Especially the King Gliok you fight in the depths where you find, like, it's like you've found its lair. And that is just so immense.
It was so fun.
And there we have it for this installment of our Tears of the Kingdom spoiler special sub-series. We've still got stuff to cover. We've got to talk about all the temples. We've got to talk about the bosses. We've got to talk about the mini-bosses. We've got to talk about our final verdict on where the game ranks alongside the other entries in the franchise. Can we do it all in one final part? Find out very soon.